This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Every time we get to the back half of June, Father's Day makes it a pretty special time of year for our guest today, Francis O'Brien, a father of 14 children. But in June of 1944, fatherhood was the furthest thing from his mind. It was all about survival. Already wounded in his first action at Roy Namur in Operation Flintlock, he was back with his buddies in L Company, 3rd Battalion, 24th Marines, 4th Marine Division, for the Battle of Saipan, a brutal 25-day battle that would claim the lives of more than 3,400 Americans and see more than 10,000 wounded.
Saipan was a much different terrain than what we had before. This was not a flat island. This had a mountain on it, Mount Apache.
Yep.
A whole different setup as far as, you know, the terrain was concerned. Japanese on one side with the 2nd Division. We were in the middle on the other side with the 4th Division. And in the middle was the Army with the 27th Division. And, of course, they weren't moving fast enough for the Marine Corps. And, of course, the lines kept extending. So finally, Halvin Mad Smith, the Marine Corps general, told the General Smith of the Army, either get going or get out. So they switched officers in there with the Army, and they put a new guy in to kind of keep up with what we were doing. Of course, when your lines get extended too far, then you're weak on your flanks. It was an interesting kind of a life. You worried about each day, but you couldn't worry because you had to get going. So then we, with Saipan, we were about 3 miles from Tinian, and we knew we were going to hit Tinian next. So, I mean, there's no surprise coming. I can remember being with Norby Savage, and we came upon a Japanese group, and he was making breakfast or something. And I reached down to get a hand grenade, forgetting that I had taped the handles of the grenade down. I didn't want any accidents happen with me in the end. So I had to take the tape off, and I got it off and threw the grenade and blew the kitchen up, and that kind of operation. And at the same time, there was a Japanese up in kind of a porthole I had, and he was taking aim at me, and that's where Rex Adams, my friend who had problems with a girl at one time, shot him and killed him, so that kind of saved me. And we had all that stuff going on, and there's a war going on. Mm-hmm. And yet there's I guess there's fun, whatever fun is. I guess near the end, we got out to Marby Point, and that's where women were throwing their kids off the cliff.
And, the suicide cliff.
They were jumping off the suicide area. And I remember one time there was a huddle of people, and I wasn't too far from them, and this elderly Japanese guy went into the huddle and set off a landmine and killed the whole raft of people there. You know, and you're thinking, wow. And we were pleading with them to surrender. We had interpreters up there talking to them, pleading with them not to commit suicide. But I think the story that we got was that they were told that to get in the Marine Corps, you had to kill your mother and father. That was a criteria for joining the Marine Corps, which, of course, wasn't true. But that's what they believed. And rather than surrender, they committed suicide.
Yeah, that was one of the great tragedies of Saipan.
That was Marby Point, and you never forget it, but that was the way it was.
Let me read something to you here, because it's signed by a guy you were just talking about, General Holland Smith, or as you all called him, Howlin' Mad Smith.
Yep.
It's a Bronze Star citation, and it says, "For heroic achievement in action against the enemy while serving with the Marine Rifle Company on Saipan, Marianas Islands, from 15 June to 9 July 1944, when his squad leader was wounded early in the operation, Corporal O'Brien took over the squad and furnished his men with an excellent example of leadership. On 22 June 1944, Corporal O'Brien carried a wounded Marine on his back for some 200 yards under hostile machine gun and mortar fire when his platoon dropped back to a defensive line for the night. On 28 June 1944, he carried a wounded Marine from a position exposed to hostile machine gun and mortar fire some 200 yards to an area where he could be evacuated. His heroic actions were a source of inspiration to those about him and were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service."
And, you know, and to be perfectly honest with you, you're scared and you want to get the hell out of there. And you'd pick up the Empire State Building and carry it if you had to.
But it says the rest of your guys in that first one on the 22nd, that the rest of your platoon had dropped back to a defensive line for the night, and you're running back out there where they're firing at you to try to rescue somebody.
Well, I mean, you know, and you don't know how you do it. You have no idea. And if you saw a movie of it, you wouldn't believe it. But you're scared. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's scared. I didn't see John Wayne out there at all. He can do all he wants in the movie, Iwo Jima, but hey, baby, when you're there, you're scared. I guess I was scared. You know, you get down, and then the other thing that happens is that people observe you. Guys had to write down stuff. Whether they had illusions, I have no idea. But if it was machine gun fire and mortar fire, I don't remember that.
You just remember one of your buddies was down?
I just remember getting the hell out of there. And that was what I did. And
tell me how you got wounded again.
On Tinian was a different story. I'd fired the bazooka stuff and all that stuff, and we thought we had it under control. We probably thought the three of us, were going to take over the whole island. Because it was only a 24-hour operation. I was wounded again, but I have no idea what it was. No idea.
But that finished you off, as far as the Marine Corps was concerned.
Well, as far as the Marine Corps was concerned, and I'll never forget when Archie Vandegrift Jr., the battalion commander, who was the son of the commandant, called me and said, "O'Brien, you're going home." I said, "You're crazy. I'm back on active duty. I'm experienced. You won't have to train anybody else." And he said, "I have a letter here from Archie Vandegrift, the commandant. This is what my dad says. This is what you're going to do." So they sent me back.
You didn't want to go home?
No, I mean, I don't want to say you're enjoying it, but it's part of your whole routine now.
So if you hadn't have gotten home, you probably would have been at Iwo Jima?
Yeah. And no doubt, if I'd have been at Iwo Jima, I'd have been killed.
No doubt.
Because the guy who took my place was Chester Darnell, who was about maybe 5'6 or so, and frail kind of a guy. He was in the foxhole, and naval gunfire, short round, phosphor shell, landed in a hole with him, and very severely burned him and all that stuff. And I was with him before he died, and went to see him in the hospital down in Houston. You know, Chester had gone back to school, was now a lawyer and all this stuff, but had it been me in that hole, being much bigger than he, it'd have been it. So, I mean, you know, and it's all by whatever the twist of God is. I mean, it's whatever's in store for you.
Well, and that's my next question, because you have 14 children, and yep. You've got more grandchildren and great-grandchildren than you can count.
Yep.
And none of them would have ever been born if you didn't come home.
Yeah, but my wife would have never had all the experiences that she had either. That's the other.
There's some evidence of that experience.
That's the other
sure.
side of the coin. You know, when I came back, I went to the YMCA where we used to hang out. And the first thing I was told was, "Babe's engaged." And I said, "Who the hell is who?" She never asked me. I went to an all-boy high school. One of our favorite things was, "What are you doing Saturday night?" And the girl would say, "Whatever, whatever." And then you would say to her, "Well, why don't you take a bath and go to bed early?" And I used to say that to Babe, and before we were married, I'd "What are you doing Saturday night?" And I used to collect tickets at the basketball game on a Saturday night. And she'd say, "Nothing." I would say, "Why don't you take a bath and go to bed early?" I apologize for that thing endless times, and I was one of her caregivers and enjoying being with her all the time. And she would say, "Obie, you were just growing up."
So you get home from World War II, you're twice wounded, you've got the Bronze Star, but you end up playing football for Dartmouth.
Yeah.
And you've got a great story about the last two-way player in the NFL and a little encounter with him.
We were playing Penn, and Penn had beaten us before the year before that, I think 39-2 or something, whatever it was. And incidentally, that year, I was 46. Ben Derrick, there were about three huge guys. Mm-hmm. He was one huge, and there were two others. And I had a bad back, but the coach still started me because I did pretty well the year before against Penn. And then we played Penn the following year, and it was nothing at the half. I remember it was like 3rd-and-1, and Sully called my play, an off-tackle play, and Ben Derrick met me in the hole. I made an inch or so, and he tried taking the football away. And I made the mistake of saying, get your hands off the ball. So he called the same play the next time, and he was right in the hole. And he hit me. And the mistake was I should have said please instead of just saying get your
But so you felt the wrath of Chuck Bednarik on that fourth and short.
But the unfortunate part is in those days, I don't know how it is today, you never met the guys you played against.
Right.
Because they got on a train, they went, or you got on a plane, they went. I told the story about Bednarik and my incident when we were coming back from overseas, my wife and I were taking a jitney from JFK down to Philadelphia. And the bus driver was talking to a friend of his that was with him, and he said, you know, about Bednarik, and my wife volunteered. My husband was tackled by Bednarik. So the guys run around, so let me shake the hand of a guy who's still living. I only wish that we had had the chance to say, hey, geez, thanks a lot for smearing me or whatever else.
Yeah, that would have been
neat. You know, you acted like they were enemy and they weren't really enemy.
The last thing I've got to ask you about before I forget, and I want to say thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us your unique story as only you could. It's pretty incredible. And you had a pretty incredible experience not too long ago going back to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial with Central Valley Honor Flight. Yeah. What did that mean to you? What did you get out of that?
I'll tell you what it really meant to me. Now, it rained endless. I mean, just rained every day. And I see my son out there getting wheelchairs out, wiping the rain off a wet wheelchair for some guy to sit down. And you know, to me, that was something. I didn't hear anybody complain about the rain. And then we get into Fresno. There's something to Virginian people there with signs and all this stuff. You know, that doesn't happen, but it did. And I enjoyed every moment of it. It was just a delightful trip. Everybody was so pleasant, really. It was a delight. It was very humbling.
Did it make you feel like people understood and appreciated not just what you did, but what those other guys that didn't come home
did?
Yeah,
I mean, because there's a whole group. And not only that, there were six women aboard the plane, too, that had done stuff during the war. People don't realize that there's more than just your life, my life. There's all kinds of lives.
We sure learned that on Hometown Heroes with the varying perspectives of the hundreds of veterans who have shared their stories here. And we're going to get a little more perspective on Mr. O'Brien now from the youngest of his 14 children, his son, John.
Well, growing up as youngest of 14, I kind of just thought it was everyone had a big family. Certainly not until I got into school that I realized that was very unusual. And for him, he just lived the life of a father who you know thought was bigger than life. I knew nothing of his war heroics really until I was more of an adult. And you know, he just never talked about it. That was something that he just kept to himself. And really in the last, I would say 10 years, he's really opened up about what he did and what he experienced and how it was really But, you know, he was an only child, and when he got in there, I mean, it was like a family, you know, being in the war. So I think that's what he really enjoyed. I mean, he enjoyed being with the camaraderie of the, you know, the men.
Did it ever occur to you that it was different or strange that he was missing a finger?
Yeah, and, you know, I had heard the stories through the siblings that, you know, there were some things that happened, and never really heard it from him, but he'd always, you know, play these little jokes and hiding a finger and, you know, putting up his nose, and so you always kind of thought, well, geez, how'd that happen? And then, you know, finally he would kind of tell you the real story of how it really did occur in battle. You know, he could play it off to where it really, you know, oh, it just kind of happened. And, you know, he was real lucky, and he was lucky. I mean, had that gone an inch to the left, I mean, you know, no one would be here right now. That I wouldn't be talking to you about this story, and he lived for a reason. And there's 14 reasons, and now there's multiple reasons why we're here. So, it's very incredible.
Well, that was my next question. You just kind of touched on it. I mean, when you take stock of everything he went through and you listen to him tell all these stories and the close calls and how easily he could have been gone, what does that tell you about your own existence? And how does that change your perspective about the way you live?
You don't take anything for granted, for one. He's lived his life that way and has cut, you know, has taught his kids to, you know, take ownership of yourself and to, you know, love each other. I mean, that's kind of been our motto in our family. And, you know, you don't know when your day is going to come. So, you know, we just kind of work and do the best we can. And for him, I know, you know, he's provided for 14 kids, and he's never, never given up. I know that's what he's instilled in all of his kids, for sure. You know, I live my life that way and certainly teach my kids. You know, it doesn't come just, you know, because it's here. You're going to get it. There's work involved. And people have paid the price to give us what we have.
He's always been there. So as long as you've been alive, he's been your dad. But now that he gets older and older, does it at all take you back a little bit to realize how incredible he is at this age to be in this good a shape and have this sharp a mind? Do you ever step back and say, wait a second, this guy's crazy?
Yeah, you know, the appreciation factor is every day. I mean, now that, you know, he's, you know, almost 92, it's funny, I'll go and visit him, you know, almost every couple of weeks or so, and I'll sit there and I'll talk to him. Sometimes I think, my gosh, it feels like it's 30 years ago I'm in high school and I'm talking to him, because he's so with it. You know, he has the stories, and I know his body's slowing down, but his mind is there, which is a good thing. He certainly can recount, at least from the war, his memories of my mom and, you know, his life growing up on, and, you know, which were good times. And he's, you know, I know he said to you, if he could do it all over again, he would, which is kind of an odd thing. You know, you want to relive a war, but, you know, he said he would do it all over again. So, yeah, it's amazing. And to cherish the days you have with someone, I mean, you've got to do that.
I don't want to make you emotional or anything, but think about Father's Day and still having him and everything that he's meant to you. What is it about him that you appreciate or admire the most?
One, he's given me my life. Two, that, you know, he has always been there for me anytime that I needed him. It's a father that, you know, I look up to. I mean, I look up to the guy today, and that's one thing that I would hope my kids would, and me. So, you know, to have a father who you can look up to is something very special in today's time, you know, because a father is, you know, the one who keeps the unit together, and he's done that countless times. And so for me, he's my hero, no doubt.
And hearing you say that is a pretty good early Father's Day present for him, I'm sure. And, you know, we probably could have covered a couple episodes with all of his stories, and there are a few more of his adventures included in the podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com. But there was another thing he didn't mention that still gets your attention.
Well, the original unit he was with, I think it was going to go up to Iceland, I believe. And during World War II, which you know very well, the Germans were coming over to the East Coast, and they were sinking a lot of the supply ships going to Europe. Well, the unit he was originally with, the ship they were on, was sunk, and there was no survivors. You know, with the fact that his grandmother died, and that, you know, he stayed home, and I think, you know, there was some divine intervention there going on. I know he left that story out, but I wanted to share that because, you know, had he been without a unit, I know he was a swimmer in college, but I don't think he can swim in 27-degree water and survive. So that was an important fact and why I'm here and why I have 13 other siblings that were able to make it.
It's pretty amazing when you add it all up. Among the photos you'll find at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page are Francis O'Brien with his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. See if you can count them all. Maybe your family isn't as big as the O'Briens, but if you're fortunate enough to still have your dad or grandpa around this Father's Day, maybe you can spend a little time digging for some of those incredible stories from long ago. It sure can put our own existence in perspective. And when those stories include adventures like the ones we heard about from a 9-fingered Marine today, it can be a powerful reminder that freedom is not free.